Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Conversations About Running. This is the podcast from Running Trips, the people behind Kenya Experience and Training Focus Camps, training camps for runners of all levels. To learn more about us and what we offer, head to our website at www.runningtrips.co.uk. Today, we are joined again by Simen Halla Haugen for part two of our discussion with the Norwegian distance star on all things Norwegian running, and in particular, the double threshold system. If you haven't listened to part one yet, then I'd recommend you check that out first before listening to today's episode in order to give yourself a detailed grounding in the fundamentals of the double threshold system. In today's episode, we delve deeper into exactly how you implement double threshold, pitfalls to avoid, and look at where the system came from in the first place. Callum discusses his experience of training in Norway under this system, and we also ask the all-important question of, does it actually work? Hey, Simen, thanks for joining us for part two.
Thanks, boys. You're welcome.
Good.
Well, cut that. What should I say to that? That was a good start.
Okay. Okay, yeah. we'll try again. Simen, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing more and more training, and the body seems to respond better and better. So I'm in a good place.
Good, man. It's good to hear. You were struggling a little bit last time when we spoke.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so you're now feeling completely healthy?
Yeah, not completely, but I try to train more and more each day, and at the time the body is coping with the training, so that's good.
Good, man. Callum, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. Had my first race of the year on Friday, just gone.
The year or the season?
I must have raced this year, so probably the season.
Did you do indoors? You did indoors, didn't you?
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I did some indoors. So my first 5K.
Okay.
So I had a 5K race, and I was quite happy. Pretty much where I expected to be right now, really. I ran 14:20 in Battersea Park. It was a good event, actually. Really nice course. Nice and flat, just like kind of two laps around Battersea Park. Well organized, good atmosphere.
Is it called like Fast 5000 or something? Is it that one?
It's the Friday Night Underlights
5K. Yeah.
I think they did one where they like combined with Podium 5K. Jack Rowe won it in a pretty fast time, like 13:40 or something.
What, this time? Or you mean when it was
With Podium? Yeah, this time it was won in still pretty fast. I think it was 13:58 or 9.
Okay.
I was fourth in 14:20, so a bit strung out at the front.
Were you chasing, were you part of the race at the front and dropped off, or was it always someone out?
No, so I think, if I remember it correctly, about four or five guys went out fairly hard, like pretty much 14-minute pace. And then I hung back in quite a big, there was like kind of a front group and then a main pack. So I finished like the first out of the like next pack, because I finished in 14:20, and then there was about 10 or 15 guys all between 14:20 and 14:30.
Oh, wow.
So it all came through at that point. But I felt pretty good, and I think it's set me up quite nicely for some more races. So
good, man. Good, man. Simen, Callum told me your brother raced yesterday.
Yeah, he was he ran this Saturday, actually. Myself, but it was a local race from the town where we're living to the next town. So it was like 7.8 kilometers, and a pretty hilly course.
Yes, yeah, it's kind of a strange course, isn't it? Because it just goes like it starts and finishes in completely different, different towns.
Yeah, so, you run from one town to another. So
What was his time?
He ran 25:53 for 7.55.
Yeah,
Okay, yeah.
so I worked it out. It's like three, I think it's like 320 per K, right?
Yeah, it was super fast. It was like, to be honest, I think if you're in your best shape ever, you can do like closely to your 10K race pace in that loop. So
Yeah.
not faster than that, but like 10K race pace, because it's kind of, if you see the elevation, it's kind of going, the start is at the same level, but it's very
Yeah, it's
hilly
up and down.
start, and then it's go downhill the last
That's
section.
very similar to Escalade in Geneva. So when
Okay.
I ran Escalade, it's 7.2K, and I ran exactly the same pace that I then raced 10K. About 8 or 9 days later. Like both are pretty similar level results.
So do you think your brother could maybe do like a 33-minute 10K then, Simon?
Yeah, I think you can do it at the 23 or 33
Yeah.
minutes, but not low. I think it would have been like 33:50 or something. It's hard to
Yeah,
say
okay.
though, but yeah.
Still very impressive.
Yeah, he ran
He's coming
super
for you,
fast.
man.
It was very good. Yeah, I have
How old
to
is he now?
start training. He's 12 years old.
Okay, yeah, that's we possibly should have said that at the start of this conversation, the start of this segment, because so cat
He
cat.
took my time from the same age with
Okay.
30 seconds.
Oh
So,
really? Oh well.
yeah.
So Callum told me, so just before we came on air, Callum said, "Oh yeah, Simmons' little brother ran really fast yesterday, but didn't tell me anything about the race. So I didn't know it was like a non-standard distance." And then when I brought it up, you just seemed completely like unimpressed by it. You're like, "Oh yeah, he raced. Yeah, I raced as well. Yeah, it's like this little local race." And I was thinking, "Oh man, Callum's built this up," and then you're just like, "Oh yeah, it's nothing."
No,
Yeah. So.
but it's not like it's as you say, not an official distance or anything. It's just more
Yeah,
like
sure.
a
But it's a good
fun
indication
race.
that he's in really good shape.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, that actually does lead me on to one of the things I wanted to talk about. So just for anyone listening who hasn't listened to episode one with Simon, we basically did a really good in-depth background into the Norwegian training system and the system that he's using, which is essentially, well, Simon can correct me later in the episode if this is incorrect, but which is essentially the same training system that the Ingebrigtsen brothers are using. And anyone then who hasn't heard that, I'd recommend listening to that before, because there are a couple of different directions I want to go in today related to that. And one of them then is about, it's kind of a double-edged thing. So one, how, if we can talk about your brother and how he's training, and at what point this sort of system comes into play, in two directions. One, in terms of age, and two, in terms of kind of either experience or just fitness. So say for example, if you're coming back from a layoff, at what point do you start doing double threshold? Like, is there a progression up to it, or do you just jump straight in from there? So yeah, there's a couple of different directions to go in. So just answering kind of any wh whatever comes to your head first, and we'll fill in the gaps.
I will answer as good as I can.
That's all we ask.
So is your brother, for example, doing the kind of same double threshold system now at the age of 12, or is that a bit too young?
No, he isn't, because he's going on school, you know, so they start like 8 o'clock, and then it's hard to
Right.
he just do single sessions, you know, nothing training before school at that
No.
this point.
But
But
is the idea the same, that you're running very controlled threshold?
yeah, absolutely. But
Okay.
they maybe run a little, some of the last reps on the intervals can be a little bit faster than threshold, but mostly threshold, because he trains with my little sister Aina, which is also a very, very good runner. She has like 9:11 at the 3K and is very talented for her age. So they train a lot together, and she trains with kind of a philosophy that they're running a little bit harder at the end of the intervals, a little bit kind of the British training system, like you're starting controlled and then you're finishing off a little bit faster. So he trains a lot with her. So yeah, he maybe do a little bit more harder stuff at the last part
Yeah,
of the
sure.
workouts.
So if he, let's say he kind of continues progressing and wants to continue being a high level runner, is there a point at which you know, his coach or who is coaching him, by the way? Is it you?
It's my mom, yeah.
Yeah, your mom. Okay, so is there a point at which she would say, okay, now we're going to start, you know, making it even more controlled and introducing a second threshold session? Or would you say this method's been working up until now, so let's continue with
no,
this?
I think definitely has to do the double threshold system at one point. But it's kind of, if you're going for that training model, you have to have it isn't a very combinable training method with a lot of school and stuff.
No, so, exactly. Or for example, probably a lot of people listening, a full-time job, for example.
Yeah, full-time job. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're in that situation, I would rather have done like a big, big threshold session in the evening or, you know, a longer threshold session than two shorter ones, you know?
Sure. And is that from a recovery point of view or purely from a time factor? So let's say someone with a full-time job was working, I don't know, 8:30 till 5:30, for example, time wise.
Yeah.
Is that because you think if you were to do a threshold session in the morning, you can't get the necessary recovery during the day because you're at work, or just purely because you can't fit the session in the morning?
A little bit of both, to be honest. Like, it's you know, to have a good threshold pace as possible, you have to sleep a lot and be fully recovered. So if you have to like wake up, let's say 6 or 5:30 to have the first threshold workout of the day to before work or school, I think then it's more. Then it's more like
it's not you're not getting the full benefit of the session.
No. Yeah,
it's interesting though, because there'll be plenty of people who are training at that time of day anyway.
Yeah. An easy jog is okay at that point, and probably a threshold session as well. But you will get to a point where you get very, very tired, or you have to go to bed extremely early. You know, you can't go to bed like 12 o'clock and wake up at 5. That's not enough sleep to recover from the.
When I get up in the morning, and if I look to see if I've got any messages from Callum, I often see on WhatsApp, like last looked at WhatsApp 11:47, and I'm thinking, come on, Cal, you're supposed to be an athlete.
Yeah, but then I get up at 9.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so that's okay, you know. But in Norway, I don't know if that's an international thing, but we have a saying that you have to have like 8 hours of sleep plus actually the amount of hours you're training. So let's say you're training 2 hours a day, then you have to sleep like 10 hours. So,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's
a lot of sleep.
Yeah, that's a lot of sleep. So, but you should probably have 8 hours of sleep.
Mm.
Like that's the minimum.
Okay, yeah, so, no, that all makes a lot of sense. So then what about, for example, an athlete either just building fitness after a break or say coming back off of an injury, would you look to build into double threshold as quickly as possible, accepting that the threshold is obviously slower, or would you build up a significant layer of fitness before even then attempting those types of sessions?
I think that's a little bit hard to say. It's in some situation it would have been more like more smart to have like single threshold sessions instead of the double ones. For example, if you're having overtrained or been tired lately and stuff like that, the first things you're doing that then is to like going from double threshold to single threshold to see if that helps the situation. Because if you're going to do the double ones, you have to be completely on and sharp, and you can't be like, if you're a little bit tired and it easily gets a little bit too much training and too much you know, it's kind of a big volume at interval intensity, so you have to be ready for that. So,
but, you know, I mean, what about an athlete who is an experienced athlete and is generally a good runner, but is just coming from an enforced break due to an injury?
Yeah, then like when you're coming from an injury, that of course, varies from injury to injury. But when I was injured, for example, in 2019, I started with the single sessions, single threshold sessions. And when I've been struggling now with the body, not injured, but the body not responding to training, I've been like starting with single sessions and felt how that worked before I've started with the double one. So I'm not at the double threshold system just yet. So I think it's smart to start with the single sessions. Because you have to build up, as you say, a little bit a base fitness kind of stuff before you start with a double threshold system.
And then, sorry to keep going on about
this. To get advantage of that, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Simon. So I want to keep investigating this a little bit just because I think there's going to be a lot of people listening to this who either have already tried double threshold or in a position where they're interested to try it and are just kind of wondering, okay, how do I introduce it? So would you then, for example, do almost, instead of double, do one and a half? Like you've got used to doing long sessions, then do a full session in the morning and half a session again in the evening and just kind of gradually add volume and volume slowly? Or do you just sort of go, okay, I'm ready. I've done one, now I'm going to two.
You should probably start, like if you're coming from an injury, for example, you should probably start with the morning session, like as you used to, and then build the evening session up more and more. For example, in the morning, you have like 5x2K and then you start off in the evening with 6x1K, 8x1K, and then to 10x1K.
I think I can add a little bit of insight here as well, because I think I'm almost in a position that Gavin, like I was almost like introduced to this system fairly abruptly, like, you know, went to Norway, trained with the guys and threw myself in to train with their method. And what me and my coach did initially was, well, firstly, the double threshold was an entirely new thing for me. So we didn't want to just say, right, okay, do what they're doing, because that would have been two or three double threshold sessions every week, which we felt would have been too much probably. So I was doing on a Tuesday, I was doing pretty much what those guys were doing, slightly reduced volume. So Simon was doing 5x2K in the morning and 10x1K in the evening. And I was doing 5x1 mile in the morning, so a little bit less, and 8x1K initially in the evening, having that on a Tuesday. And then Thursday and Saturday, I was back to just one session, like my normal training.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I was kind of introducing it like fairly significant amount of threshold work on the Tuesday, but just one double session per week. And that worked really well for me. And it's actually something I still kind of still do that now. Even though we have tried the doing it entirely Simmons way, basically. So double threshold sessions, 2 or 3 times per week. I felt like for me, once was enough, and then only one session on the Thursday and one session on Saturday. So I'm still getting 4 quality workouts, but I felt like that was a good balance for me, at least at this stage. And I felt like that was a nice way of introducing the double threshold work.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. What's been your experience, or like, what have you noticed when, or maybe you haven't noticed anything, that with athletes in the UK who are introducing double threshold? Because it's definitely, I wouldn't say it's becoming like popular, but you're seeing it more and more in what other people are doing. Have you noticed any sort of trend?
Yeah, for sure. And for me, it's really interesting because I've training with Simon, I've kind of seen how like the actual method is supposed to be done, kind of thing. I mean, Simon's very scientific about it. And Simon's, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Simon, but your grandfather was coaching Marius Bakken for a while, right? For a long
time. Yeah, he was coaching him from his early years.
So Simon's grandfather was actually pretty integral in the training method that lots of the guys in Norway are using today. You know, he was there at the very beginning with Marius Bakken when they were kind of testing this model. I've been there training with Simon, and then having seen some of the guys in the UK doing it, I think that the one biggest difference, and I think Simon will vouch for this as well, is that there's still a lack of understanding about what control really means. And I know we spoke about this a lot in the previous episode, so I don't want to stay too much on this subject, but For me, control meant pretty much not like being on the floor at the end of a session, you know.
Yeah, so
I was still pushing really, really hard, but because I was able to stand up at the session, at end of the session, and felt, you know, like, oh, okay, that was a good workout, and now I can do a cool down. For me, that felt controlled, but actually, it wasn't so controlled that I could then repeat that on Thursday and then again on Saturday and then do a long run on Sunday and then do it all again next week and the week after, you know, like,
yeah,
good on that day, but am I controlled in terms of the month, the 6 months, the 9 month block that makes up training? Probably not.
So do you think then that without the measures in place that Simon has and is common in Norway, such as regular lactate testing, do you think it is a danger to do this kind of thing, or is it just a case of you just need to learn? You essentially just need to learn that measure of control and then be strict in implementing it.
I feel like I've learned it, but only because I've trained with Simon and he's told me off a few times when, like, you know, there was one time when we did, I did 4x2K in the morning and the exact same feeling I just described, like felt controlled. But I remember I put my hands on my knees at the end of the session. Pretty normal. Like, I sometimes do that after an easy run, you know. And Simon didn't say anything, but then later that evening I had my session wasn't that good, and he just turned around and said, you know, Callum, I saw you with your hands on your knees at the end of the morning threshold and I knew your session was going to be bad this evening.
Mm.
I was like, yeah, okay, I, like, you know, kind of building up an understanding of how controlled it really needs to be. And like, yeah, honestly, I do a threshold session now in the morning, 4 or 5 times 2K, and really, I come back, have some breakfast, shower, and feel like, okay, I feel like I've done an easy run, you know. I really feel, it feels easy, and that, I think that's how it should be, at least for the morning session. And like, yeah, I still feel like a lot of people are seeing, okay, on my program it says workout, therefore it should be pretty hard, you know.
Yeah, of course,
but it's just not. And yeah, training with Simon.
Have you got anything in place now, objectively, that you measure, or is it just a subjective feeling and you've learned the difference?
Yeah, other than the pace, no. Right. So when I'm doing my morning sessions, I train the same location and run pretty much the same pace, give or take a few seconds based on feeling. So yeah, mine is based much more on how I feel than Simmons. Simmons obviously measuring lactate and running with a heart rate monitor. So for me, yeah, probably that's the next like step in the game. It would be to maybe implement some of that. But I do feel like I've got a pretty good balance right now. I feel like it's worked quite well. And I feel like you can do it that way. But it probably takes a bit more practice and experience. And I also would say, I wouldn't have been able to do it that way if I hadn't been training with Simon to like guide me and tell me.
Yeah, sure. Wrong.
If I had seen on Instagram that, oh, this is how the Ingebrigtsens train, and then tried to do it myself, I'm certain that I would have fallen into the same trap I've described of what I've seen other people doing, and pushing far too hard. And the thing is with that as well, is I think if you're a good runner with a good level of experience and a fairly solid base of fitness, you can get away with that for a couple of months. You know, you can push hard, you can do several double threshold sessions, feel good, see some noticeable improvements. And then, like Simon was saying last week, then you fall off a cliff, you know, you've just overdone it. And that can sometimes be really damaging. So yeah, it's Simon's, from what I've seen, Simon's training and the other guys I was training in within Norway, their focus is all about the year, like the 9 months of winter. They never think about one individual session.
Yeah, sure. But that's definitely very different to the normal attitude here, isn't it? Like, people think their career's over if they have one bad Tuesday night.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so again, we've almost accidentally touched on one of the other subjects that I wanted to talk about, which is then where did this all come from? So yeah Simon, because I actually thought, I'm probably going to get told off for this, like I thought Gert Ingebrigtsen made this all up. Like, yeah. I thought this was his invention and you lot are copying him.
Yeah, kind of. Okay, the when my grandfather was running at the 70s, we had like a very, very big talented group of guys here in Norway at the 1970s with my grandfather and Knut Qualheim and some other guys that starting with the threshold system, like based on Lydiard from the United States of America. So they started to do threshold training. But they only did like single threshold sessions, and they did some interval sessions, but most of the intervals was actually like tempo sessions at threshold pace. And then my grandfather and stuff started to coach Marius, and it's actually Marius that started with the double threshold system here in Norway. So the double threshold system to Marius was kind of based on the training from the Norwegian guys from the 1970s, you know, with a good amount of base training at the threshold. And then he started to do two sessions a day with the threshold intensity. So the Ingeborg system.
So for anyone, I mean, to me, that's a name. I know Marius back and I know a bit about him, but can you just give like a very brief profile of Marius for people who haven't?
Yeah. Marius was actually when my grandfather first coached him, he was starting like as an 800 meter runner, and then he had like 149 at 800, so it was pretty good but not super solid, you know. And then he started to do threshold training and longer stuff, and he found out that he had a great talent for that. So he have a personal best on the 5K at 13:06, I think that's his.
Yeah, I was going to say 07, so somewhere around there.
Yeah, 13:06, 13:07. It was the Norwegian record before Jakob Ingebrigtsen took it in 2019. And
I thought you were finished. No, sorry, I thought you were finishing. Carry on.
No, he has like 7:39 at the 3K, and I think he has 3:38 at the 15.
Yeah, so there was a point in time where he was one of the only non-Africans who was mixing it in things like Diamond League 5000s.
Yeah, absolutely. Early 2000s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, he's very much one of the most elite runners in that era. Yeah, yeah. Okay, great. So, yeah, then back to sort of the story of where this whole system came from and how it's developed and popularized.
Yeah, so kind of he was actually the man behind the double threshold system is Marius Bakken. Okay. But then the Ingebrigtsen guys like started to kind of build from that. You know, we don't know what they're doing, like 100% what they're doing. We have like a kind of knowing what they're doing in like the base training with double threshold system and stuff, but we don't know what they do to like peak it in the in the competition and stuff. That's kind of the secret, you know. The base training is kind of, yeah, you can do double threshold, you can do single threshold. It's not that kind of, it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is to have like a big amount of running at a very, very high intensity, you know, training threshold intensity, and bigger build a big base on that. But the kind of clue here is to make it in good results in the summer at the track
So that aspect is not necessarily standardized like that. That then starts to differ, and people have their own methods and their own philosophies. Okay, so can you talk us then how do you personally approach that? How much time do you spend in double threshold? How much time, like how and what do you change as competition season approaches?
Like last year, for example, I tried to train double threshold system as long as I could in the race season as well. But I think, to be honest, that I would have run faster last year if I would have been even more like, you know, as a runner and as an athlete, you're always like, my biggest confusion is not training good enough, like not training enough and like easing too much up, you know, into the competition. That's I get like, what should, how should I say this in English? But you know, it can be too little training as well into the competition, you know.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Some people, like 20 minutes easy jog the last week before the race is perfect. For other guys, you have to have pretty tough and big sessions very closely to the competition. So it's very, it varies a lot from person to person. But last year, for example, I had kind of a method where I had, like, let's say if I was racing at Saturday, I was doing double threshold at Tuesday, and then just had easy jog from the last double threshold session at Tuesday to the race, and that worked out pretty well. But I think it's not the most efficient way to get fresh legs for the competition, and probably I could have run even faster if I was like had been smarter coming into the competitions, you know.
Were you doing some like specific work for the race as well? So for example, last week you gave us a weekly overview of what was happening in the base training period. Yeah. Were you changing any of that let's say 3 or 4 weeks out from a target race? Were you swapping out, say, the Saturday hills for like a hard track session or something?
Yeah,
like that.
Definitely. Like in the base training, we're doing like, as I said, the hill reps and stuff like that.
Mm.
But in the race season, in the track season, we're changing the hill reps to track sessions. For example, let's say 2x8x 300 meter with 60 seconds rec, or 3x4x400 with 90 seconds rec and stuff like that. So maybe some case as well at race pace. But last year, before my best competitions, I actually didn't have any longer reps at race pace. I only had like some over speed with the 300 meters and the 400 meters.
Sure.
So how approximately how many months or weeks of the year would you spend in base, and then how much time would you then be in more specific training?
Yeah, let's say if everything would have gone to plan, I would have done like base training, let's say from October to the end of April, like out of April and in the start of the May, I would have changed to the more specific training. Mm-hmm. I would probably have done like the base training in May as well, but changed the hill reps with some track sessions. And then in June, for example, I would have taken the volume of the training a lot down and done more competitions and more specific work. I think that's the best approach to get the most layout of your body in the competition period. Because of course you have to train a lot in the competition period as well, especially if you're doing kind of, if your biggest race goal of the year is in August, you can't just like do racing and very very little volume training from May to August, you know, because then your shape would probably have gone down. So you have to build up with some base training in between the races from May to August if your goal of the year is to have a good best shape ever in August.
You essentially, in terms of the threshold and the base, you enter sort of maintenance period. You have to do enough to maintain it, but you're not trying to build it anymore.
Yeah, kind of. That'd be... you want to like in May you should have like, then your threshold is probably hopefully at your peak, you know, and then it's all about like keep it at that level, because you know, when you're starting doing more specific workouts, for example, track sessions and stuff like that, it will affect your threshold a little bit. Your threshold will probably go a little bit down, but your lactate tolerance will be much better. So you're running faster in the competitions, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah,
but,
great.
But I have to be honest with that, because my kind of my biggest weakness in the training program and stuff like that is that I still don't have like the optimal solutions for the training in the summer period. I'm still like working out to find the best solutions for me there.
Yeah.
So
okay.
For example, last year when I said like I had the double threshold at Tuesday and raced my best race ever at Saturday, it was like, okay, maybe it works for me, but to be honest, I don't think that is the best possible way to get the most out of your body at Saturday. So yeah, I'm still working on that.
Yeah, okay. Now you've got plenty of years to finesse the system, haven't you?
Yeah.
Just rewinding a little bit, because I know we're kind of in the summer season now, talking about peaking for races, but after the last episode we did, I had a couple of questions from a few guys that were the same, both about how much you use the treadmill, because you guys I mean I know you do, but the guys in Norway especially are using the treadmill for a lot of the training. Is that to do with the training itself, or is that just purely because it snows a lot in Norway and you can't use the roads as much as you'd like?
When I started like the threshold, when I started at with double threshold the system for the very first time, I did like you did, you know, with the 8K in the morning and 8K in the evening. And yes. Then I did like mostly of my training outside. I didn't do any training at all at the treadmill, except when it was snowing and stuff. Yeah. But when the years has gone, I've started to notice that it's easier to get the morning threshold controlled if I'm doing it at the treadmill. So that's how I do it now. Like I'm doing all my morning interval sessions at at Tuesday and Thursday at the treadmill. That's basically to have the total control of it and just type in the pace and run.
Sure. Yeah.
And, so would you... and the conditions, you know, the conditions in Norway and probably Britain as well are very varying a lot. So
yeah.
So it's kind of a good way to just have the same conditions and don't let the
same temperature, same wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And would you ever do, so that's for the morning session. Would you ever do like the slightly harder evening sessions on the treadmill as well? Or in fact, I know that you've done even, we used to do a hill rep session and Simon even did that on the treadmill once where he just whacked the incline up and ran a hill session on the treadmill.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy, like, guy.
Yeah. But the kind of the best thing with the treadmill is, if you have like a intensity aim for your session, it's the best tool ever to manage to like to hit the
maintain
hit
the
perfect
intensity.
maintain the intensity and hit the perfect intensity, you know, because when we're running outside and you come up at my shoulder and we're starting to sprinting at the last rep, you know, that doesn't happen on the treadmill, you know, so. So it's a very good tool for keeping it controlled, and especially for me in my situation when I have like a body that's not responding that good to training anymore and I'm struggling with that, it's even more important, you know, to keep the intensity down and have the total and fully control in it.
Yeah. So we did have some good duels last winter, didn't we?
Yeah, we had.
To cap the Callum, are you going to do that again over the... winter's gone now, isn't it? But I was going to say, even if you're not in Norway, would you consider trying that again? Or have you now settled on once a week max and that's enough for...
I think in the winter I'll discuss it with my coach, but probably we'll go to at least once, but maybe twice a week doing double threshold. And I'm like, I feel like I'm getting a bit old. Like, I'm only 27, but I feel like, you know, I need to start pressing on with my training and, you know, really hitting the ceiling of what I can achieve. So I think we can, try and increase the amount of volume that I'm doing at threshold, a bit like what we were speaking about last week, how the, as you get more experience, the easy training becomes a bit less important, and it's more important to try and increase the volume of higher intensity work that you're doing. Yeah, I think I'll probably start doing that more over the winter. So yeah, possibly an extra threshold session per week. Yeah, but I've found it's really worked for me. It's worked really well. I think for me, the biggest aspect is the, I'm banging on about it, but the biggest aspect is the consistency. So just the ability to, just by taking down the intensity of that session, you know, so where in the winter I was doing, let's say a session with 8K worth of volume and really hammering the last couple of reps and then just being really tired and muscles are aching. And, you know, I've increased the volume, but it means that my body is able to recover better. I can get in more sessions and do it more consistently throughout the whole winter. So then come the summer, one thing I would mention is for me, and I don't know if Simmons experienced this or if he has anything to add on it, but one thing I found last year after a full winter of training very controlled, like what we've been speaking about, my races in kind of May, the first summer races, I felt in really great shape. Like, I was really aerobically strong and I was training really well and I was super confident that I could run a fast time. And then my first couple of races just felt so incredibly hard, and I couldn't get as deep into the hurt locker that I could have done previously. And I feel like part of that was because I had almost taught my body to run so controlled. You know, every session I was doing, I was almost having to tell myself mentally, right, keep it controlled. Then suddenly when the time came to do the opposite, okay, no control today, we're going absolutely all out, this is a race situation, I felt like I didn't have any practice in that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
yeah.
I felt like mentally I needed a little bit of time in the early part of the season to readapt to going all out, basically, because I hadn't in previous years, in training sessions, going all out was fairly normal for me. And then suddenly I've gone a whole year where everything's controlled. So that was something I think I needed. Hopefully I'm going to get right this year. We've changed a few things so that isn't the case.
But also it was only a case of you had to accept it twice and then you were like, okay, fine, that's how you race. So it's not like the season.
It wasn't the whole season, but it was almost like,
opportunities wasted, you mean?
Yeah, to an extent. And I think, like, if I could repeat last year exactly as it was, I would have done some much harder sessions in preparation for the race. So let's say my first serious race was at the end of May. In early May, I would have done some like really very hard track sessions or something where
something like pacing Jake Smith for 2K over 5K.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that worked, you know, that was good because I had to go real hard for, I went to like 6 and a bit minutes of running at 2:45 per K, which on that day in the wind was really hard.
Yeah, like, it looked, you know, hard. It looked,
yeah,
hard. Really funny,
yeah. 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 So like, yeah. And that kind of thing actually. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. So as you were rewinding 5 minutes or so, and you were talking about kind of the way you thought that the biggest improvement came from essentially increasing the volume of hard work. It just reminded me again, I mean, in my head I was doing Canova impressions, but I say it's been a long time since I've done one out loud. But volume of intensity is essentially one of the key aspects of Renato's training, and that's one of the things that he always says differentiates what he feels a lot of Western runners are doing from what the runners that he's working with are doing, is that they may not do more mileage in total, but they do more mileage at high intensity. And again, there's a different way of going about it, but the end goal is essentially exactly is exactly the same as what you've just described that you've done. It just struck me as interesting. Yeah, different way of going about it, but ultimately the same end goal.
Yeah, I think though this is where the crux is, and where if people who are listening are kind of interested to try this system out, this is where you just have to be so careful, because for a lot of people, even doing a double easy run per day, you know, an easy run in the morning and an easy run in the evening, that's a pretty big increase in stress on the body. You've shortened your recovery window. You're getting in more mileage, more impact through the legs. So doing a double session per day where that's not even just an easy run, but it's actually something harder than an easy run. Yeah, you just have to be, very careful and controlled. Mm-hmm. You know, we've said it a million times, but that is just how it is.
So I wouldn't say not necessarily to wrap up, but another thing I want to discuss before we do wrap up is we're almost taking for granted that this works, and we've got Callum's anecdotal evidence that he feels it's worked for him. It's what Simmons using and Simmons running really well. But what I do want to kind of ask you, Simon, is like, what it sounds great, and you know, let's just assume I'm a skeptic and I'm just saying, well, hang on, how do we know this works? Like, are the results in Norway significantly better than they were before?
Yeah, definitely. But that can be something to do with like more talents, as I said in the first episode as well, that more and more talents are choosing to do running instead of cross country skiing as well. So there's more people running as well. But we've seen a significantly increase of the results after people starting to do this double threshold system. But people are also training more systematically and going more into it than before as well.
Yeah, it's more of like a career.
Yeah, kind of. At my age, you have to like make a decision. Do you want to focus on school and education? Or do you want to try to make your dream come true, you know? So more and more people are daring to dream, let's say, in that way.
I think that's fantastic, but I'm also wondering, do you not feel that this method of training is compatible with being, for example, a full-time student? Because it seems to me that when you're at university is almost one of the best times possible for high level training. I don't know if British universities are just too easy or what.
I don't know. Like when I was at school, we had like a kind of we had some exercises where we had like the time to do training and stuff. But when you're starting to like after school and are going to study and stuff, it's basically school from, let's say, 8 to 4 o'clock. So the normal study life for people after school isn't very combinable with this type of training.
But is that the same at university though? You have to be in something organized from 8 until 4.
Yeah.
Really?
What did you do at uni, Gavin?
Well, I did sports science at...
Well, that says it all. Says it all.
It doesn't, because you need to listen to the next sentence. At the world's most prestigious sports university.
Yeah, but then you have to, like, be at school, you know, let's say from 9 to 3 or 9 to 4, I don't know, but...
Yeah, no, in my final year, I had 3 hours of contact time a week.
Yeah, okay.
Like lectures?
Yeah, I think it was like two lectures. That can't have been the whole year. That must have been like at one point. But I just remember at one point it was just most of the people on the course had 3 hours of organized work to do per week.
I think a lot of British universities are, because they're research institutes.
Right. They assume you're reading in your own time.
Yeah, exactly. And they can't dedicate the like lecture hours that teaching universities can.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, So, I mean, three isn't the norm, but I think like 10 or 12 hours a week was pretty normal throughout my student days. I think it was 10 years ago. So no, much more than that. It was 15 years ago. So I can't remember precisely, but it certainly wasn't a difficult schedule.
No.
But my kind of what I was going to say here is, was like, if you want to run as fast as possible and to train as good as possible, and when Callum was with me in Portugal, he has seen how much training I am laying down to be as good as I can. So that isn't combinable with being a cool student, like, you know?
Like,
so
because
it's a working day. It's kind of a job.
Because the more high intensity work you're doing, the more like extra maintenance stuff you have to do around it as well, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so Simon's doing his double threshold on Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday, but then also he's having to do the extra, like, in order to do that, he has to do the gym work, the mobility work, the like strength and conditioning, the sprints and like everything that goes with it. And that's the stuff that takes the time. So like, probably, yeah, you're right. Like you could go and bash out a threshold session in an hour in the morning and then an hour again in the evening. And that's probably okay. But
to be honest, like as Callum is saying now, you will be good, but you don't have the time to the details, you know, the things that makes you going from a 13:45 runner to a 13:30 runner, you know, you don't have the time to do the details. So the result is good, but is it as good as you want it to be? Or like, I don't know, we are different kind of persons, but I'm a guy that rather I do it 100% or I don't do it. Like, I don't want to do anything that I don't can, like,
be
responsible for. You know, like, I want my work to be as good as it can.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. So on that note, kind of talking about you personally, what are the extra things that you're doing as an athlete? You know, are you getting massage? Are you doing rolling yourself? Are you eating particular foods? Is there supplements? No. Or...
The food is more what? To get
yeah, I'm wondering why that why body, Callum, but, yeah. why did that make Callum burst out laughing?
Oh, I just had flashbacks of our time in Portugal.
Baked beans on toast.
Like, so I just found it so funny how like Simon is just so like everything in his training life is just immaculate. Like, it's like to the finest detail, everything is like the shoes he has laid out and like ready to go, and like his like training is timed to the minute. Like, we have to leave at this time and we're doing this. But then the diet was like, right, okay, Callum, we've done a hard threshold session today. It's really important that we have dessert. And he's just like got a mountain of ice cream with like M&Ms on it and stuff like that. And he's like looking me in the eye saying, it's important that we eat this. And like, yeah. And I'm like, I just found it so funny how like everything's like perfect. And then he's just like shoveling mountains of pasta and everything. And like, yeah, fair play. Like, and it, you know, his reasoning was, right, I'm not getting ill and I'm not getting a stress fracture, so I'm eating as much as I possibly can. And I was like, yeah. By the end of that trip, I was like, I couldn't keep up with him on the training and I couldn't keep up with him on the eating either. Like, it was incredible. Incredible to see.
Yeah, you have to eat a lot if you're training a lot.
Yeah, so ice cream's the key, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you definitely have to have some desserts at double days. That's the key.
Yeah, well, what about sports nutrition type stuff? Are you into any of that, or you just eat?
Yeah, that's kind of a new thing I've added to my training lately, because I haven't been like so up to nutrition and stuff before now, but I've seen that if I'm going to optimize the training I'm doing, I have to do some sports drinks and stuff at training. Kind of, okay. So I started to do that. We have a brand in Norway called Fuel of Norway, which
I've heard about them.
Is Morten Norwegian?
Morten is Swedish, I think.
Oh, Swedish, okay.
Yeah, so a lot of people are doing that as well. But to say it like in an easy way, before I was only having water at my bottle for 25 times 400 with a total training of 2 hours for that session, you know?
Yeah.
But you actually need to fuel up with like say 30 grams of carbs per hour. So I've started now to skip the water and bring with me some real stuff instead.
Yeah.
And okay. You found that. Does that make a difference?
Just to keep the quality on the training as good as possible.
Almost just to be careful rather than.
Yeah.
Because it's necessarily.
To not get empty during the session, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get you don't want to be at the 18th rep on the 400 and feel empty. So
yeah, of course.
It's just to fuel up the whole way and give the body the fuel.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you doing some fuel kind of sports?
No, but that not really, to be honest, not in training like that. I do when I'm doing my long runs, I will. So like I'll take if I do a long run with some harder stuff inside the long run, which is something in my training that I've actually not seen in your training. So like sometimes in the long run we'll add some like threshold reps inside the long run and I'll definitely take some nutrition then, so like some gels or like drink or something. But
So are you bringing that with you in the pockets of the
I just shove two gels into my pocket.
Or
sometimes I'll leave a drink somewhere on the route that I know I'm going to pass later and grab it and hope that it's still there when I get back. But never in track sessions. But it does. The way you described it kind of makes sense, because everything you do is about the quality of the work and the like increasing the amount of high intensity. So it does make sense that, you know, from a nutritional aspect, you want to keep the quality there as well.
Yeah, I don't know if this will make any difference, but you know, it's the details, and I think that can make, if that can makes me recover even quicker, I'll do anything. Like I'm
definitely anything. Doing so that. Have a big asterisk next to I'll do anything.
that didn't sound very good, but you know what I mean. You know, you're willing to
anything. Yeah. So what about any other recovery methods you're using? Ice baths, compression?
No, just
sleep.
Just massage. I'm doing some compression socks in between the sessions and stuff, but I don't know. I don't know if it helps. It's just.
Mm.
And you're taking taking naps often on the double threshold days.
Yeah,
as well,
I try to do some take some naps, but mostly I don't. It's more like having an hour without any distracting elements, kind of phone, PC and stuff. It's I mostly I've like slept so good the night before that I'm not tired.
So it's fully relaxation rather than actually falling asleep.
Yeah, kind of.
Mm, cool. Callum, any sort of final thoughts or final questions for Simon, whether they're specific to this or just general?
I did have one question, but I'm concerned it might go on too long, but maybe I'll ask it and then we'll just see how it goes. Just about 5 or 10 minutes ago, we were talking about where this kind of system came from and if we had seen any better results recently as a result of the system being used by runners, the double threshold system. Norway has always been, you know, pretty much the world's best nation for cross-country skiing. Do the cross-country skiers use that like a similar system, or are they doing something different? Like, do you know what their training's like?
The cross-country training is mostly like kind of the marathon training, you know, with bigger single sessions.
Right.
Kind of, you know, the longer you run, the more single sessions and with a bigger volume you have. So the cross country skiers are not very into double threshold system.
Right.
Some
okay.
people have tried it, but they've gone in the British trap with it being too hard.
Sure.
Is that
hard?
Is,
you know.
So like when we here talk about Norwegian training, we know like roughly what they mean. When you're out there, if you use the phrase British training, is everyone kind of chuckling? Oh yeah, those stupid Brits.
No, yeah, not that stupid, was me. But kind of. We have maybe.
I'm pretty sure you.
I mean,
the
to be
exact
fair,
word.
Like we've got some really damn good runners as well, haven't we? So
yeah, absolutely. And you see, let's take the Mark Scottish British, but let's say the Bowerman Track Club, I don't think they do any double.
No, but
training,
they,
and they're training hard as well. So
for sure, what I know they do is that they I mean, apart from eat burritos, what they do is I think, I don't know if it's what they call it, but what I would describe as like cruise intervals, which I think is essentially the same kind of thing. It's still like, you know, like 8 miles worth of 8 miles, or sometimes maybe even 10 miles worth of work in a session. So yeah, again, I don't think that, I think if you studied it, you'd still find not similarities in method, but yeah, it's still trying to achieve the same end goal of higher volume of hard work, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, there's lots of different ways to get there, aren't
there?
Yeah,
people are training in different ways, and it isn't one solution that fits all, you know.
Yeah, but for sure.
We're going to have a high volume at a very high intensity, you have to, the control of it is essential, you know, because if it gets too hard, you don't recover, and then you're I don't know if it's allowed to say, but then you're fucked.
Yeah. No, you're fine. You've waited until the last couple of minutes of the second episode to swear, so we'll allow it. All right, cool. I mean, I think we should probably wrap it up there before we go on too long.
Thanks very much again,
Simon. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a fantastic couple of episodes. We'll be sure to keep an eye on what you're up to, and maybe you can come back on after the track season or at any point, maybe next winter, or just whenever, and we'll get an update on how you're getting on.
I'm joining if you ask me. So,
good man.
It has been fun.
Yeah, thanks.
I just hope the intro was okay.
we'll cut it out. Don't worry. Simon muddled his words up at the start, so we won't include that bit.
Nice. Yeah, I think you've done brilliantly. Thank you very much, Simon.
Nice. Awesome. But Callum, you're coming to Norway 13th of May, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, on the 12th of May. Yeah, coming over.
Oh, nice.
For a race. Yeah.
Not for like a block of training, just for a race.
Well, I'm going for about 10 days, and the race is at the end of that 10 days. So yeah, I'll do a little bit of training with the guys, and then race at the end, and then back home.
Is where Amalia's from, like close by to where Simon's from?
Yeah, very close. Yeah, maybe 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of other guys we've been training with there, Jonathan and Oliver, who I was training with last winter as well.
Are you in the same race?
I'm in the same. I believe I'm in the same race as Oliver. Jonathan, unfortunately, has just had a stress fracture, so he won't be racing. Yeah, because he gutted for him, because he's been training really well all winter, and then stress fracture. So I'll be racing Oliver, I think, the showdown.
I need some more time to build up here.
Everything
goes to plan. I will maybe do some track races in August, but my main focus is to get back on track.
This is his. This is Simon's grandfather's race, right? The Per Haller Invitational, and I got an invite from the man himself.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so pretty cool.
It will be nice, but I'm looking forward to training with you then, Cal. We have to do some training and some barbecuing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You're welcome.
Oh, Simon, sorry. So just before we do go, your first episode is currently 20 listens behind being our top ever.
Oh yeah.
Top ranked episode. Yeah, you're currently you're currently number two behind Kev Seaward. I don't know if you've heard of Kev. He's run 2:10 for the marathon, and he does work full time. Like, he's a full time head teacher at a secondary school.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So at the moment he's beating you by 20 listens, but
listeners,
we might have a chance to bump it up.
Maybe we take a Donald Trump or something to do some calls and get people to listen.
Yeah. So if that's not a motivation for you to help us promote this episode, then I don't know what is, because that would be a hell of an achievement.
But do you think this episode will be that good?
Well, we'll wait and see, won't we? We'll wait and see. Yeah. But hopefully, if someone listens to this one who hasn't listened to the first one, they'll go back. But no, the first episode was very, very well received. So I see no reason why this one.
That's nice. I've got some questions at Instagram and stuff that people are wondering about the training and stuff. So I've tried to answer. I tried to be a better version of myself than when Callum sent me the first message on Instagram some years ago.
You mean people messaged you like after listening to the podcast?
Yeah. And asking about the training, and it's nice to that people.
You've got
are
fans.
Yeah, people only ask because they're interested, aren't they?
Yeah, of course. It's a compliment, I know. But
yeah, of course.
When I'm not training that much and don't have much school, it's just nice to answer and stuff. But
yeah,
I'm not ready to be an influencer just yet, I think.
Yeah, good man. Yeah, stick to running. Yeah. Right, awesome. Cheers.
Nice.
Cheers,
cool. Thanks, thank you, boys.
Good man.
See you later.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Conversations About Running, the podcast from Running Trips. Running Trips are here to bring you the world's best training camps. Our camps include Kenya experience in the 10 Kenya, where we combine a training camp with a cultural immersion into the world of Kenyan running, and training focus camps, UK-based weekends for competitive runners of all levels who want to learn from world-class experts in small groups at high-performance venues. To learn more about our training camps or opportunities to work with our coaches remotely, please visit www.runningtrips.co.uk or see us on Instagram at runningtripsofficial.